how I felt every day. Sure. Like I was handcuffed, that I could not get out of bed without either taking my pills or putting Suboxone into my mouth and leaving the house without one of those things in my back left pocket. Like I had to have it. As long as I had it with me, I was good.
Exactly.
And I said, so to wake up and not have to do that, I said, it's got to be a better feeling than getting out of prison.
I'm Flint Anderson, founder of PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need. I've been in recovery since 2001, and there isn't much I don't know about recovery. And my mission is to constantly tell the truth about addiction, to make the realities of addiction, recovery, and drug culture known, and to drive awareness and advocate change that ultimately saves lives.
And I'm Jason LaChance, a certified recovery coach with a passion for speaking with others and sharing their knowledge to help others seek recovery and maintain long-term sobriety. And this is the Don't Hide the Scars podcast, presented by PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need.
Joey Guerriero, thank you for coming back and joining the founder of PAIN, Flint Anderson, and myself. That's a lot right there. Founder of PAIN, Flint Anderson,
and
myself.
That's a lot to say, especially this time of the day.
Jason LaChance on Don't Hide the Scars. Boy, where do we dig in with this stuff? Yesterday, Joe, you and I, you know, we'll chat, send each other encouragement as we're in recovery, but you sent me this stuff on Suboxone and the movement now towards it being a part of telehealth. Mm-hmm. And so for us three guys, that sends up a lot of concern.
Yes.
Really fast.
A lot of concern, a lot of red flags. Yeah. A lot of everything.
Yeah, it brings back a lot of memories.
Doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, it does.
Because I don't think we had talked about it. You did have I don't want to say a run, but did utilize Suboxone at one point.
Yeah, I had a pretty long experience. I was on and off it for like the last 6 years of my using pills and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, when that popped up yesterday, the first thing I thought of was, well, you know what? And then I was, you two guys, I'm like, I need to get a hold of them because it's just... Like I was saying before we started, I just don't want anybody to go through the things that I put myself through.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's just kind of concerning because...
Yeah, not only concerned, but again, I'd like you to explain, so it's coming from somebody else, the withdrawal symptoms of Suboxone. Everybody thinks this is kind of the miracle drug. Mm-hmm. Nobody talks about... When it come down to the end of it and when you want to get off of it. Mm-hmm. Nobody talks about that. I don't even think clients are told that when they go in to get it from their doctor or a clinic or somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So let everybody know what that's like.
Yeah, so I found out about it from another addict who was a really good friend of mine. He told me about it. This is back in 2013. So I'm like, wow, that sounds amazing. You're telling me that I can take something that eliminates withdrawals and it doesn't get me high, so I'm not like feeling all loopy. I just feel like normal, which I haven't felt in years. Like, sounds like the miracle drug, the Holy Grail. So I went to that same doctor, and no, he didn't explain anything like you just said. He just asked me to give him a little details about my usage of opiates. And I told him, yeah, I take like 20 pills a day, whatever. And from what I can recall, the conversation went real quick into like 5 questions, asking me about my withdrawal symptoms and other things last time I used. And based on the amount of pills I was taking, he gave me a prescription. He says, come back in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And every 2 weeks I'd go back and just have a shorter conversation would just be those 5 questions. And as I mentioned to you before, eventually he started asking if I felt that we should lower the dosage. And my response was always the same. No, I think we're good.
Right.
And why was that my answer? Because I'm an addict.
Right.
I don't understand the drug. All I know is that I feel better than I've felt in years.
Right.
Take away all the worry of trying to find pills and all that stuff so I can actually focus on work a little bit instead of that other job. And then I like ran out or couldn't get back into him or something, and then I experienced those withdrawals and they were just as bad, if not worse, than the pills. So of course went and got some pills because those were easy to get.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was like a lot of other drugs. It wasn't explained. I didn't even think it was a drug at first, if that's what you want. I mean, that's what it's called, but I didn't consider it a drug.
Right.
So I had a rough experience with it, thinking I'm good to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really thought at first my initial reaction was, I don't care if I have to take this every day for the rest of my life because that'll be much better than what I'm doing now.
Right.
And then it just, kept spiraling back and forth. And as I mentioned to you earlier, they say, yo, don't take opiates, you'll get sick. Well, I'm a drug addict. I'm not going to listen to them. Right. And I feel like, okay, I kind of got this under control, so I can dabble with some pills here and there. And I went and got a bunch of Norcos and slammed three like I always would just to get going, and right. Felt great.
Absolutely.
Didn't have the interaction they were talking about. And I continued to do that. So
Right.
But yeah, it's just one of those things about just people just need to be informed.
Yeah.
Right. And that's our big thing here.
Exactly.
It's just look, there I know there's gonna be some people out there that are never going to be able to get clean. That's just a fact. Mm-hmm. And if Suboxone is going to help those people, look, again, it's not my first choice, but I'd rather have them on that,
right,
and living some sort of a decent life than the alternative. But once again, we're not talking about proper treatment. We're not talking about telling people that there is a way out, that abstinence is an option here. You can do it. I think a lot of times we're almost insinuating that you can't do it.
Well, I think this has become like the you're doing it.
Oh. Yeah.
I think it's really spun as the way to go, you're doing it. And I'm not knocking anyone that does, you know, go that path, but hey, I would rather instead of you're shooting up heroin with the same dirty needle, someone mm-hmm. else, whatever. Okay, look, hey, I don't want you to die either. But I think it's really being presented as you're doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When that option isn't ever given, like, well, have you tried going completely clean? Or, hey, thank you for coming in. Thank you for being so transparent. You know, doctor-patient relationship. This is your plan. This is how right. we're going to taper you.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it sounds like for you, it was as simple as just going to the doctor. There wasn't any other continuum of care.
No, of course right. not. It was just, I think they drug tested me like that first appointment. And maybe here and there, like I don't even recall maybe getting tested again. But yeah, no, there was no plan of treatment. Right. And in that advertisement that we saw yesterday, they were calling it while you're in treatment. I watched like a video and I'm like, so treatment is doing a telehealth appointment, getting the Suboxone, and just doing that all over again? Like, I mean, like,
it doesn't seem that it's
confusing to me.
It doesn't sound too far from the methadone clinic no. experience.
Look, it's just another, it's another way for people to make money.
Yep.
I firmly believe that.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy. Suboxone does not have that stigma that regular opioids have. Mm-hmm. So people aren't going to bitch too much about that. But again, the reality is try stopping it.
Yeah.
When you're at 12 milligrams or 16 milligrams, mm-hmm. most doctors aren't going to go over 16 milligrams to start you with. You know, it's 16 and down from there. But, you know, you and I were talking again prior to this thing, and I was telling him that, you know, it comes in different, the strips come in different milligrams, right?
Right.
Well, it stops at 2 milligrams. So if somebody wants to taper down, why don't they have a 1 milligram strip? Why don't they have a 0.5 milligram strip?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could actually, I mean, if you're talking about just from a money standpoint, they probably make more money off of it that right. way. But so when the addict gets down to that 2 milligrams, and everybody thinks, oh, 2 milligrams, that's nothing. That's everything
mm-hmm.
when you have to stop at that 2 milligrams.
Oh, yeah. I can tell you about that.
Right? Not only the physical part of it, but the psychological piece to it. So now the addict has to cut it in half, cut it in a third, whatever it is, mm-hmm. to get that down. And after a while, they're going to go, fuck this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm not going to spend my time cutting it, or I dropped a piece somewhere, or, you know, because it's sublingual. Yeah. It's not like it's a pill. And they do have pills too, though, by the way. But the sublingual just hits you faster. So
yeah.
Anyway, it's just nobody's being told the real story about all this stuff. And then, of course, you have the advocates out there. They're going, yes, this is wonderful. It's going to keep you alive, blah, blah, blah. It still keeps you trapped. No matter how you slice it, no matter how you talk about it, it's going to still keep you trapped. End of story.
Yeah, I had one of my brother's, old friend of my brother's back from high school. I ran into him at a morning maintenance meeting like a couple months after I got home from treatment. And I hadn't seen the guy in years. I knew he had been in prison for whatever. And, you know, I'm like, oh, you know, in here, like, drinking too much, whatever, drugs. Like, you know, I'm just telling about myself and just asking him. And he's like, oh, yeah, heroin, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he's like, yeah, but I've been on Suboxone for a while now, so now I'm doing good. And I'm like, cool. I'm like, and what's your plan to get off of it? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, I don't really have one. I said, well, I'm not going to tell you what to do. And I said, and I've only been sober for a couple months, but I said, having those handcuffs removed, and I said, that's a bad analogy to a guy that just got out of prison. But I said, literally, that's how I felt every day, sure. Like I was handcuffed, that I could not get out of bed without either taking my pills or putting Suboxone into my mouth and leaving the house without one of those things in my back left pocket. Like, I had to have it. As long as I had it with me, I was good.
Exactly.
And I said, so to wake up and not have to do that, I said, it's got to be a better feeling than getting out of prison.
It's a huge relief. Yeah.
New Perceptions North, the premier drug and alcohol treatment and recovery center in Central California. A full continuum of medically supervised top quality care with programs for detox and patient residential treatment with dual diagnosis, intensive outpatient treatment, sober living support groups, and more. New Perceptions North provides adult men and women with the highest caliber of professional health care, treating each client with compassion and respect. In a safe, comfortable environment to begin the process of recovery to proudly create and sustain a life without addiction. Call 559-978-1507 or visit newperceptionsnorth.com.
Yeah, because no matter what, we're all under the influence of something in life.
Mm-hmm.
You, it was a switch to fitness. Flint, you with all the work you've done here with pain, me coming on board with the, you know, finding a way for people to share their stories. We're all going to be under the influence of something. And like you said, that was your first influence of the day. Mm-hmm. For me, it's prayer, meditation, breath work. For you, it's hitting the gym, eating right, you know, Flint, all that you do.
So coffee, you're going to be cigarette. And, yeah. Okay.
You're going to be under the influence of something.
Yeah.
And this is what you're deciding when we talk about the trap, that this is what you're going to be influenced the rest of your life. It's not going to change.
Yeah.
It's not going to change if you decide that this is the path that you will go. And it's not a benign choice. I think that's the other frustrating thing, that it's like you said, the magic drug.
Yeah.
It comes with consequences, just like anything else.
They all do.
Yeah, because I'm telling you, like, you get that person that, like, really wants it, like, you know, wants to be off their drug of choice that's an opiate, and you introduce them to Suboxone without that plan. They're going to find out real quick that one time they can't get their refill or they left it at home and they can't find it. They're going to find out real quick what they're dealing with. And again, my experience is only with one local doctor who seemed to be just giving it to whoever wanted it. So I don't know what other doctors are saying. But when you read about it online, like, you don't really read too much about, well, you might read that, oh, it is also an opiate, but it doesn't say that it's going to affect you with withdrawals just as bad, if not worse, than whatever your other drugs are.
Yeah.
So when that happens to people, it's not a very good feeling.
No, it's not. You know, but again, there are families out there that that, you know, may have lost a child to this, and of course, a lot of their thinking now is, wow, I wish my son or daughter would have gone down that road. So there's a part of me that says, well, how do you argue with that?
Yeah.
You know, there's always that human side to me, right?
Well, of course.
That says, yeah, I understand that. And so I'm not going to really argue with a family that has lost a child over this. When I'm talking, this is for the people that are still upright and still vertical and still breathing, you know, that there is a better option here. But you know, when the society today, when you keep getting hounded daily, social media, whatever it is, okay, that hey, this is going to help you. Even if you're told the truth, I would imagine most of that goes right out the window, right? Because like you said, with us opiate addicts,
so much of this is psychological as well. And that just goes to what you said about that, that one in your back pocket. If I, if you got that one in your back pocket, you're good.
Yeah,
you can go back. You can go back.
It's your Swiss Army knife, man.
That's it, or your 45. You know, either one. But yeah. So all of a sudden now you take that away from us.
Mm-hmm.
Holy. Okay, you think you're going to get a fight? Of course you are.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I think I've mentioned it, or we talked about it before. Like to touch on the psychological part. I mean, that's the. The craziest part about being an opiate addict for me was that I can tell you the countless times where I was just like dope sick as you could be, wanting to die, you know, texting every person that I knew that I could always get pills from. And as soon as somebody texts me back that, oh, I can meet you in whatever amount of time, wherever, I would start feeling a little bit better. And then I would meet this person and just get them into my possession without putting them in my mouth, and just putting them, getting it in my hands, like immediately start feeling better.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so that psychological part of it, I don't know. I have no clue how it works.
I don't either.
I'm not the only one, apparently, because other addicts have talked about it. So it's like, it's real.
It's real.
Oh, yeah. It'd be that with booze if I had the DTs or something, hand shaking, and people can't see, but it got my left hand shaking, and if this coffee was the bottle of whatever.
Stop shaking.
Smooth.
Right.
Once I touch it, I haven't taken a drink yet. Mm-hmm. It just,
right.
I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
I hated that psychological piece to it.
I do too.
That was the worst part.
It was. It's the worst part of all, because, sort of along your lines, you know, I was out at Bullard High School coaching, and I was out, and I'm, you know, this is February, and it was cold outside, and I got a bunch of 13-year-olds running around, mm-hmm. right? And I'm jonesing out there, and I'm sitting in the wet grass, okay? It was a Saturday. And again, this is a long time ago, so things were different. And I called about three different doctors, right? Just to lie, just to get a script called into Walgreens. And mm-hmm. sure, one doctor calls back, and he calls it in, right? All of a sudden, I went from shaking to calm.
Best practice ever after that, probably, right?
Best practice ever. Because my thinking was, because it was Walgreens was right around there, the corner, right? 15 minutes, I'm going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, try explaining that to somebody.
You can't.
You know, you can't. And that brings up the piece of, when, no matter if you're talking to a parent or you're talking to Sacramento or you're talking to even doctors, they don't understand. I know I keep beating this dead horse.
Yeah, but
okay, but they don't
understand. Oh, that horse is galloping, my friend, because it's like, hey, pay attention here.
Pay attention, because they don't understand addiction or the addict.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand it. And until these people start to understand how this stuff makes us think, how it makes us function, how it makes us think, do all of the things we need to do, nothing's going to change.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to change.
I know. It's simple. Like with a drug like Suboxone, I think it is a fantastic tool because, like I told
you,
it
is.
Yeah. I was like doing it on my own. And then when I finally decided to ask for help and I went to treatment, the day that I got there, they took us to the doctor, told them everything I've been doing, taking, they test you and whatever. And he put me on Suboxone, put me on some other medication for alcohol withdrawals. Sent it back. They gave me that while I was at his office, and then they sent the rest of it back with the facility, and they administered it for, I think it was 3 or 4 days, but they tapered it down.
Right.
Yeah.
And after those 3 or 4 days were up, my body was just in shock from going 3 or 4 days without any alcohol or any opiates. But like, I didn't feel like
right.
Yeah.
I felt okay for a couple days. I was kind of tired, but like nothing like it was before whenever I had withdrawals. So I'm like, wow, for me, here's a perfect example of how this should be used.
Right.
I don't know the solution how to do that like at home or outpatient or whatever because it didn't work for me.
Right.
But
hardly ever does.
Right.
Hardly ever does, like, when you're doing it.
If there is a way to put a plan in place and actually execute it, that drug could be like one of the greatest tools out there.
Well, let me just explain this to you guys, because I was just talking to my partner about a couple of things. And, you know, treatment has changed drastically from you know the from the mid 2000s to today. And one of the things we did when the treatment center was down in Los Angeles is that when we brought somebody in, and I'm speaking specifically of opioid addicts and alcoholics at this point, because you have to be able to work with your physician on this. And the physician has to know addiction, because most physicians are just going to write the script. And again, today, most treatment facilities, their doctors are addiction specialists. We used to make sure that client, when we took them down to our place in LA, that they were on detox drugs for over 2 weeks. And let me tell you something. The number one reason why people leave treatment is because they feel like That's the number one reason why kids will call their parents and say, hey, it's time for me to go. I got to get out of here. All right, because they feel lousy. They're not being, excuse the term, but not being medicated enough in order for them to get through this properly. Again, we're not over-medicating. We are just medicating to the point where you're not dope sick. Right. Now they have a chance at to start to learn what we're teaching down there as well. As opposed to today, where because of insurance companies, if that insurance company thinks that client is doing well enough in the first 3 to 4 days, they're going to stop that at 3 or 4 days, the detox. And
that's crazy.
Right now you're putting somebody, or hopefully they're going to stay into residential. But now the next 2 weeks is hell because they haven't been detoxed properly, and there's not a damn thing we can do about it except write back to the insurance company and say, hey, this is what this person is going through. So there is, and I we don't believe at our facility that when you have somebody on a detox med for 2 weeks, that is not going to turn them into, quote, a Suboxone addict or any other type, because they're in a place where they're safe, they're being monitored, right? There's a doctor right there, the whole nine yards. Again, it goes back to, and I'm going to keep repeating this till the day I die, the insurance companies, the physicians, they don't understand the addict.
Mm-hmm.
They don't understand the fear that we go through. Okay, if we're cut off too soon, we're going to tell everybody to go to hell, and we're going to get out of there.
Yeah.
If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, please call PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, at 559-579-1551 or visit us online at painnonprofit.org. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at PAIN Nonprofit. And please subscribe to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast and share with others wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And if you would like to donate to PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, please click the link in the description to make your tax-deductible donation today and help us save more lives gripped by addiction.
Back to what you just said a second ago about, like, you know, feeling safe. Like, for me, I went to treatment for 28 days, and I hear you say all the time, like, you know, that's not enough time. Like, I just feel like I worked a program when I got out, but, like, I just feel lucky that I had the acceptance.
Yep.
I had the spiritual awakening, all these things. I had a lot of guilt for it, too, that I talked to my cousin about a lot, because I went to that treatment center because that's where he went in 1996. But, like, just feeling safe and secure, knowing that I was with professionals, they were leading me in the right direction as far as medicating me for that first week, however many days that was, and just the whole facility and what we were doing every hour on the hour. I'm right. Like, okay, like, my whole family knows what's going on, where I am, so they don't have to worry.
Right.
And I'm just going to trust these people because they wouldn't be in business for as long as they have been if they were doing shady shit.
Correct.
So for me, again, I feel lucky, but it worked. And I know how it feels the way you were describing that for, you know, people saying, oh, I don't feel right. I think I need more. If they're not going to give me more, I got to get out of here. And that it's, that that feeling feels like a curse. Oh, and what it God, does yeah. to you psychologically is so damaging that it's just like, I don't know. I just, again, I repeat myself on basic things. Like, I don't want anybody to go through what I went through.
Right.
So I want to tell my story and experiences, but also my experience, strength, and hope of like, there is another side.
Yeah. There is another side. And I think the thing we try to get across here is we're not anti-Suboxone. No. What we're anti is leaving an addict to their own volition.
Right.
Is
because that's we it. Know exactly what, like I was just saying with Flint, like what if I had a harm reduction plan as an alcoholic and it was like, you get a shot of whiskey a night. Mm-hmm. And that's good, or let's say it was a pint, and then we're going to get you down to like a shot. Well, it would come that one night where I had the worst freaking day possible, yeah. And it's like, well, they've left me the bottle. Do you think I'm just going to do the one shot that night? No.
Right, no.
Yeah, so it's like, why isn't there, or why is there not legislation that requires, because at the end of the day, my perspective, a client-doctor relationship, you want to do something that is in the best interest of your patient's health.
Yes.
And that's go ahead.
How is long term leaving them on this, especially if it's a 20-year-old, a 30-year-old, right. You know, yeah. Right. Even a 40 or maybe even a 50. We're right. Not talking about a guy that, you know, the Why? Unfortunate, well, I was going to say the unfortunate people that are, you yeah. know, homeless or whatever. I talked with a doctor in New York and I had asked him, hopefully we'll talk with him here on this because he does prescribe Suboxone, but his clients are homeless individuals. And he's like, there is no resource for me to send them to treatment.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So my job, or at least where I feel I do this, is keeping them from, you know, a supply that could kill them. So I get that.
Yeah.
But we can't leave an addict to their own volition.
Right. No. And I've said that for years. You know, if it's that 65-year-old heroin addict, fentanyl addict, whoever it is, and they're homeless, they're on the street, and you've got to leave them on Suboxone for the rest of their life, fine.
Yeah.
I don't have an issue with it. Again, what I take issue with is the 20, 25-year-old up to 40, you know, or even 50, like you said, because I've been 50. All right, it's not old, right? I mean, there's plenty of life left, and so why do you want to leave somebody on a medication that literally is going to strap you down? And you said something that triggered my head a few minutes ago. You know, let's say, you know, you just got married. You and your wife are going to go on your honeymoon, and you're still taking Suboxone. And let's say you're going to Bora Bora, right? Well, you better make sure you got enough to take with you, buddy, because if you don't, your ass is on the next plane coming home.
That'd be a horrible plane ride, too.
You bet your butt.
Probably be in a diaper.
Right? Exactly. Again, that's part of the piece that they're not explaining to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, like, you know, the difference between that and methadone is, you have to go to the clinic every day till eventually they'll let you take it home, right? But it's... instead of every day, it's just every 2 weeks, as far as I know.
Right.
Like, I don't think you can get prescribed more than 2 weeks at once, at least when I was getting it.
Yeah, I think so.
But yeah, like, so it's just a never-ending cycle. It's just going to keep going on and on. And, like, just put a plan in place and work it. Like, because if you're going to take the step, again, I don't know how anybody else's mind works except for mine. But, like, if you're going to take the step saying, I'm tired of shooting up heroin. I'm tired of taking all these pills, you know, whatever. To like say, here's an option. Okay, let's learn about it. But you're an addict and you're in your active addiction. You just want to not be dope sick. You're not really interested in like, what's the game plan here? Because I want to keep rolling with my regular life and not really let this affect me. And I just want to get that dope sickness away from me. No, I'll just keep taking. I'll keep taking because, you know, I got stuff to take care of. Like, so it's I don't have the solution. I just have these ideas and thoughts.
Yeah.
But like, there's just got to be a way.
I think that it's really weak after you had sent us that, you know, that company that it's a telehealth to get your Suboxone and really watching it, kind of looking into it and even watching how the doctor was talking about it and everything. It's really weak in that support system part of it. Yeah, like it seems like it just seems as simple as, okay, instead of having to go like you did, or what if the doctor cancels? Like I, even this morning, I was thinking about it before you got here. I had a doctor's appointment end of the month. It's moved till April.
Mm-hmm.
What if I was someone that was on right. that, and that was the only way I could get? Well, I'm back out there on the streets real
Absolutely.
Quick, believing whatever this person says when I go, I don't want fentanyl, just make sure it's, you know, Oxycontin only. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, you know, and so if there isn't that continuum of care on the psychological piece, and a psychological piece isn't five frickin' questions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not a quick checkbox. If there isn't that there, then it's just not going to change. Your life really isn't going to change. You may not be using an illicit supply, but there is not very much that's right. going to change Nothing. About your life. Not really. The way you think, not the right. way you feel, not the way you see the world and your place in it. Nothing.
Yep.
And that's what concerns me about what you sent us.
Yes.
This mm-hmm. telehealth stuff. Right? Mm-hmm. It really does. You know, their follow-up with a patient would be, did you get it? Did you receive it? Right?
Yeah. I mean, is it holding you?
Exactly. You know, is the dose holding you type of thing? I just take such issue with people that are doing this. Look, there might be some people out there that are doing this that maybe their intentions are good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to take away from somebody if their intentions are good. But if you're going to do this, you better know all damn sides to it.
Yeah.
You better.
Yeah.
Because I mean think about this. Because normally before we give somebody Suboxone, you have to be in withdrawal. You have to be in withdrawal. Yeah. Because if you're not and again, you don't have to be in full withdrawal. We need to be able to see your face. We need to see if your eyes are tearing up, if you know what mm-hmm. what's your skin color, I mean how you're acting, all of that comes into play. So if a telehealth place is sending somebody there's a box zone, and this person, you know, gets it in the mail, however the hell it comes, right? They get it. And they just took 16 Norco mm-hmm. an hour beforehand, and they dropped that Suboxone. They're not going to die, but do you know how sick they're going to get?
That's what they say, but like I said, for me,
I know
there's
some of us that with you know that it really doesn't happen. But as a general rule, that happens, and we've seen it because I own a treatment facility.
Yeah.
So we were very careful on not giving it too soon. And again, you don't have to be in full withdrawal. You have to at least start the withdrawal symptoms. But again, I repeat myself, what happens when that person, if they don't tell them that,
mm-hmm.
then they are misleading that client.
Yeah.
They really are. And by the way, what happens if that person does die?
That's what I was going to say. I mean, if you're mixing that with it, I mean, we just saw it. We talked about a celebrity here that, you know, went in cardiac arrest because of it.
Because it's what nobody's getting here, just like you said, okay? Obviously, and I did the same thing with methadone,
mm-hmm.
all right? So I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
But it all depends on how much is in your system. If I just took a Norco, for example, and I just use some methadone, I'm not going to get sick.
Right.
Okay. If I've got 70 milligrams of Norco in my ass, okay, yeah, then I'm going to get sick.
Mm-hmm.
If I take that methadone
yeah.
or that Suboxone. So again, it goes back to inform your people, inform right. your clients, let them know from A to Z what the is going to happen and what is not, okay, mm-hmm. if you decide to start taking
yeah, don't
stuff.
Paint this, like, beautiful picture of, like, here's right. this is your saving grace. Like, no, right. here's a tool to help you make some major changes in your life before you do end up on the streets or dead or whatever.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, you've been doing this a long time now, and you keep saying things that make sense to me. Like you just mentioned, like, these are doctors and, you know, business people that don't have, and lawmakers that don't have a clue of what it is like to be an addict.
They don't.
So simple logical thinking says, well, why don't, doesn't the government or whoever, like, just require, you know, long-term recovery addicts as consultants or something, have them working in every single aspect of it to help these extremely intelligent and smart people that are making decisions and making drugs and running these businesses, to help them do what's, because guess what? Do what's right for the people. You're still going to make all the freaking money in the world that you're trying to make anyways.
Yeah.
So if you're going to make all that money and go through all this, help the freaking people and understand what it is like to be them. And the only thing, way to do that, I think, is, yeah, people like you need to be working with every single one of these companies and legislatures. And
we've mentioned it to all of them that we've had on the air.
And they probably laugh, right?
Well, actually, the ones that we have don't, because they've known me for quite some time. And most of them are all on board with this. Here we go.
Go ahead, Flynn.
This is still not a topic that is number one in hearts and souls. It just isn't. I mean, I want you to think about this. Again, I'm not trying to brag or be arrogant or any of those things. But besides us, who lately have you even seen out there that's talking about this? I'll tell you what, I haven't seen anything in the last 3.5 months. All right, on whether it's awareness, whether it's about what I'm talking, I've seen nothing. Mm-hmm. Little bits and pieces here and there. You know, we're gonna have another summit because we want people to understand the stigma. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. How many more damn summits is everybody gonna go to here? Okay, it is time for the change.
Yeah,
it's time for change.
It really is. We don't need to be talking about Joe Biden and Donald Trump and the election this year and then the election next year and all these political things that divide the country. Yeah, policymakers, they make the laws and this and that. But, you know, my family, I'll let you guess which side most of them are on, but, you know, been in business in the Valley for almost 70 years. Right. 70 years. That's a long time for a family to be in business, a small family business. How many different Republicans and Democrats have come and gone in control of Congress and the president's office? Yeah, things go up and down, and over time, it stays the same regardless.
It does.
Business is business. Don't worry about that. Why not talk about the things that matter to actual people? Mm-hmm. Gas prices are going to go up and they're going to come down. The number of addicts and people with problems like that on the streets and in their home or whatever, that number doesn't go up and down. It just slowly keeps going up.
Exactly.
And that has a direct impact on almost 100% of people's lives.
Yep.
Has, one has an impact on crime, has on health care, on our tax dollars, okay, going to help these people. I mean, when you've got addicts, practicing addicts on the street, it affects everybody.
Yeah.
I don't give a damn what anybody says.
You guys know that I go to the gym really early in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be driving down knees between Palm and Blackstone at 3:30, between 3:30 and 4:30 in the morning almost every day. I mean, my eyes are wide open because I can't tell you how many times somebody's pushing a shopping cart at 3:30 in the morning, just in the middle of the street, crossing the street, that right. if I look down at my phone and don't see, I could easily kill them.
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's just everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. Well, and then, you know, I have it where my youngest, don't go in there right now. Why? Well, because there's homeless people outside. And one of them, it tends to be my adopted addict there, and I'm just not comfortable. Okay, well, then this establishment just lost my business. Mm-hmm. It's affecting everything.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. Like, you know, public health and safety. You want an interesting fact here that I learned? So, you know, in the French Revolution, you know, the group that was the beheaders, if you translate that, it's the Public Health and Safety Commission.
No kidding. Really?
Yeah. So those are the people. So we see a lot of, you know, these, beheading, like, so to speak, chopping stuff, people off at the head, metaphorically.
Our Public Health and Safety Committee in Sacramento are I'll say it out loud and proud, okay, the most worthless individuals I have ever come across in my entire life. And I am not exaggerating.
I don't know anything about it, but I can agree with that statement.
I'm telling you, when these people do not have the public's safety concerns in their best interest at all. Not at all. It is disgusting. It's vile. I'm not joking. It is the most disgusting thing I have ever attended in Sacramento. I don't even know why they exist. There's no reason for them to exist because they don't do anything.
Now, are these the people that like gave all the money to put all the homeless people in hotels because like that's supposed to get them off the streets and off of drugs?
No, it's not them. What public health and safety is, perfect example. You're selling fentanyl and you've killed somebody. You sold it to some kid and that kid dies. Our fight is we need to give jail sentences and prison sentences to that dealer.
Mm-hmm. Murder.
As
yeah.
murder.
Yeah.
Okay. They vote no. They're the ones that have voted no.
Because prisons are too crowded?
Prisons too crowded, costs too much money, doesn't work, blah, blah, blah.
Is it really going to make a difference?
Right. That's public health and safety. These people do nothing to protect the citizens of the state of California. They do nothing. I've been there numerous times. I've sat in front of them and watched these people. All right. And I literally want to stand up and go, what the f*** is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Okay. What are you thinking here? By the way, the Republicans that are on that committee are always fighting for the safety of this state. The Democrats that are sitting there could care less.
Yeah, and it sounds like I bet their argument is basically like, well, they're going to get it from somebody. It's their fault and this and that, as opposed to the dealer. Okay, well, great. So the dealer, if you find the son of a bitch, you put him in prison or whatever, and they're just going to buy it from somebody else. Okay, great. But we might have saved a couple of lives that we're buying from the guy in jail, and the next person put that, like, a little bit of consequences for your actions as,
you know, they will not, and they will not give any. They simply will not give any.
It's a really odd ideology. It really, really is. It's almost a little too utopian. Like, you don't get that the addict, their priority is their addiction. That's it. Mm-hmm. And they'll do any and everything.
Yeah.
And they will die until something of something intervenes. You, me, I don't know, remember Flint, spiritual awakening.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was like, whoa, well, this is what you're talking about. That's what kept me going. Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, something's going to intervene. And I'm going to tell you, handcuffs aren't fun. That's not a fun way to be have something, an intervention in your life. But it takes these things.
Yeah.
And if you're going to live in some ideology, well, we'll keep giving them a safe supply, and here's a place to live, and then eventually they're just going to go and prosper. No, not when all of it's handed to you.
Mm-hmm.
You've taken all the legwork out.
Yeah.
Right.
You mean I don't have to charm that lady that saw me 2 weeks ago to be like, sure, I'll have another drink. Oh, mm-hmm. Thank you for buying me one. I was a master of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's you're removing all of it. There's going to be no incentive to change their life.
Well, and when Pam Smith was telling her story in front of the committee, which she's done several times, the last time we were there, a congresswoman or an assemblywoman, Bonta, looks right at Pam. I was sitting right there. Looks at Pam and says, oh, Miss Smith, she said, I'm sorry, we grieve with you over the loss of your son. But would it really do any good to put that person in prison that sold him the drug?
I mean, with a straight face.
With a straight face.
Mm-hmm.
With a straight face. Like I say, she might as well have just walked up to Pam and hit
spit
her in the
on
nose.
Her, yeah.
Right? I mean, that's the mentality of the Public Health and Safety Committee. That is their mentality.
And these are elected people?
These are elected people.
Wow.
These are elected people. But then you got guys like Jim Patterson who fight them every day.
Yeah.
And now, you know, I told Jim one time, I said, now I understand what you're up against. I've been up there. I've seen it enough times. You know, and as a Republican, just trying to do the right thing is damn near impossible.
Mm-hmm.
In Sacramento right now.
Yeah, because, as you know, I'm the same age as your son. Grew up in the 80s. So, like, Ronald Reagan and Nancy Reagan, the war on drugs, all that crap, right? So obviously here we are 40-something years later, it hasn't really worked. But think about in the last 40 years, if there was an actual plan of action and all the funds that could have gone into it, it's like, why not start now? Because time is going to pass no matter what. Like, on an individual level, if you want to do something, you know it's going to take a long time. Well, the longer you put it off, then the longer it's going to take to finish, right? So start now. So I just don't understand how there's, this is such a big, the reason I brought it up is the war on drugs, right? That was over 40 years ago that started.
Oh, yeah.
And we are way worse off than we were in the 80s.
Absolutely we are.
And obviously everybody knows the war on drugs didn't work. But you're telling me that these people on the two sides of the aisle, over 40 plus years, they couldn't come together and make a frickin' plan?
Right, they can't.
And that's like the most disgusting thing I've ever heard, because that's not what this country was supposed to be about.
That's right. It's, this should not be a partisan issue.
Right. I mean, plain and simple.
Plain and simple. In fact, you know, there was another big bust. I just read about it this morning. See, there goes my brain again. I can't remember where it was. But to your point about the war on drugs, we're never going to win the war on drugs. Ever. No. Ever. Once we plug a hole, somebody's going to figure out another way how to get it in.
No, we just have to figure out how to take care of people.
But when you've got DEA and FBI and everybody else that are making large busts, right? If they're getting, you know, and again, by the way, when you get 450,000 fentanyl pills off the street, that's not a large bust.
Sounds like it, but
it's not. Okay, it's not. So when you have a large bust, even that bust of 450,000 pills, somebody's not going to die today because they did their job.
Right.
Somebody's not going to die today because somebody did their job. That's why I respect the hell out of all those people.
Absolutely.
But why doesn't, and again, I'm not that politically bright, but I don't understand why we can't go into Mexico with the help of the Mexican government, all right, and fight this thing together. What are we afraid of? Why aren't we even making that attempt to do that? Again, it all starts with closing the border.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the first thing. And again, this, you know, I do like to get into some political stuff, but I just, as what I think is a normal human being, I don't understand why. When I listen to Mayorkas, that asswipe, okay, who can't even answer a simple question. Literally, they ought to dump his ass on the other side of the border.
Yeah, they should.
And then give him an app to try to get back in, because now there's apps being given out to the illegals, to the aliens, to make your appointment to come in, to, you know, so you can get in the country, right? Well, hey, Mayorkas, I'll drive you across there. I'll dump your ass over there.
Mm-hmm.
But God, this guy just pisses me off.
I know.
But I don't understand. It doesn't take, it shouldn't take an act of Congress, right, to do what's right. I mean, it's going to, because they have to vote on it. But my God, I just don't get it anymore.
I don't either. And the border open, border closed. The drugs are still going to get across. However, if we did have it closed like it's supposed to be to protect the people of this country, a lot less would get through.
That's my point.
That's all we want.
That's my point.
And so if you're on whatever side of the fence that is for this, what do you get out of it? I don't understand how anybody, like, yeah, of course this country was founded by people just moving here and coming here. Yeah, you want to come, there's a way. The way to get here kind of sucks and takes a long time and probably takes some money, but
it's legal.
It's legal. And if you are a true asylum seeker, they'll get you in pretty quick.
You bet.
If you have a valid reason.
You bet.
And in the meantime, these people are just bringing all these drugs in, and it's...
And I love all the cities. I love the city of Chicago and New York that wanted to be sanctuary cities, right? and now you've got the people that are on government aid in those cities going, this is not right. This is not fair. This, why are you doing this? And I'll respond to this stuff going, well, listen, you voted for them.
Yep. Okay. Ramifications of your ideology.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. So guess what? When this election comes up, change your vote.
Mm-hmm.
It's not rocket science.
No.
It's not. So I don't know. I think that, again, going back to the initial conversation here, we have to be able to inform people of what they're up against if they make that choice to stay on Suboxone, okay. But at least we gave them the real story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we haven't even talked about the potential health risks of being on long-term. Oh, sleep disorder, bowel dysfunction. How, by the way, I mean, I know this is not a very pleasant topic, but how constipated were you during your...
First few years, it was pretty rough. And then, I don't know, my body adapted or something.
Okay, right.
Back to normal now, though, for 4.5 years.
Yeah, exactly, right? But it got so bad that I tore everything inside.
Wow.
Right? So bowel obstructions, heart issues, like I said, sleep disorders. What else was on that list? There's numerous health risks that may not appear immediately. But what happens when you're 60 and you've been clean for 20 years, let's say? A lot of this comes back to bite you in the butt.
Mm-hmm.
So again, inform.
And I think, I probably said this earlier, but I do think that any addict that's looking to try Suboxone or whatever, I don't think they're as closed-minded as someone in their active addiction where you just tell them, like, here, you want to try this to get rid of that? Like, no, I'm good with what I'm doing. Someone who's, they might be a lot more receptive to, this is actually how it works. This is like the, go back to having a plan. Like, we'll put together something to get you off. I don't know how well that conversation worked, but like I said, I feel from my own experience, is when you're in your active addiction and looking at that alternative, you are probably, or more than likely, open to at least having a conversation.
Yeah. Well, I think we're open to the conversation, but I'm gonna go back to, and I am a firm believer that, not saying that not everybody, this is gonna happen to, but most people, like you say, if it's left on or to our own device,
mm-hmm.
we're gonna probably take the road less traveled. Instead, well, is that right?
This one would be the most traveled.
Most traveled, right? That's why I love people being able to stay in treatment for just a little bit longer, because like we said in the beginning, they're safe. They're taken care of. They know that nothing is going to happen to them mm-hmm. in there. And I'm not going to lie to anybody. When you get down to that last little bit and now you're off, you're going to go through some flu-like symptoms. You are. It's just mm-hmm. a fact. When you put poison in your body, it has to come out somehow.
Right.
And it's not going to come out by rainbows coming out of your mouth. All right? You're going to feel a little uncomfortable for about 2 to 3 days. That's it. And it's not even anything to write home about.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more psychological than anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's why I like the treatment option. But again, we're not giving people the treatment options either, because, hell, nobody can afford it. Nobody's got the right insurance. And Medi-Cal treatment centers don't do that.
The Medi-Cal treatment centers don't offer,
for the most part.
Wow.
They will offer Suboxone, but they're not gonna be able to keep them very long. Every insurance company, no matter what it is, wants to get them out of detox and residential and into outpatient as quickly as possible.
Well, again, what's the driving factor behind it all? It's just money.
Money. It always is.
You know, if you want to talk like back to like kind of politics, but like the Obamacare thing, like I just remember hearing the right side saying how stupid it was. And as far as how it applies to like addiction and treatments, I don't know, but I'm a little familiar
with that.
But it's a health insurance option for people that can't get it anywhere else.
Of course.
And it's great. The government pays for all of it or some of it. That's fine. But why can't we take all those resources and just create some kind of change to the system? Because, health insurance, we all have to have it. It's really expensive. You know, after a certain age, I mean, forget about it. $600 a month for a woman, $500 a month for a man, or whatever the hell it is at the age of 45. But things like that. Okay, I pay all this premium. I don't ever get sick. I don't go to the doctor, but I'm a drug addict and I need to go to, or an alcoholic and I need to go to treatment. And like the, okay, you can go for X amount of days and you're out. Like,
yeah.
Well, on my plan, because I do have the covered California, if I went, hey, Flint, man, I really relapse. I need to come down there. Flint's going to have to gift me. It won't cover it.
That's
wild. Even as a subsidized.
Yeah, it won't cover it.
That's wild.
It's absolutely nuts. But I also think that along with that, counties have to have enough facilities to take care of everybody. No county has the number of facilities to take care of everybody. City of San Francisco, $569 million budget for substance use disorder and mental health, 57 beds to service 25,000 practicing addicts in the city of San Francisco.
57 beds, huh?
57 beds. So where, by the way, that's supposed to cover substance use disorder and mental health. So where's all the money going?
Yeah, it's $100 million a person or a bed, huh?
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous, okay? It's ridiculous. Those are the things that most people don't get, don't understand. They've never heard that before. You know, nobody pays too much attention to that stuff. Well, we're bringing it to the forefront.
Yeah, and you guys, everybody needs to as well, because like, okay, the federal government has, what, a $33 trillion deficit? So obviously, this country's been in the business of just printing money for a really long time.
For a long time.
And yeah, we need to have, you know, a strong defense and all that stuff. But I mean, come on. Like, this has been a pandemic, epidemic, whatever the hell demic it's supposed to be called, like, for a really long time. And nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem like it's going to.
Well, again, history repeats itself. Mm-hmm. And when you start looking at the drug issue as a whole, It really has just continued to develop since the 1800s, you know, since China and Britain got into the whole heroin thing. You know, we allowed cocaine and heroin to be sold in pharmacies, you know, in the early 1900s. And then we put restrictions on it. Now it's illegal, and then something else comes back to where it's legal, and then we make it illegal, and it goes back and forth and back and forth. And then you look at, like in the 70s, I remember you couldn't get a prescription for opiates. I mean, you could, but they were really hard to get. You had to have your leg snapped in half. Mm-hmm. Well, then here comes Purdue in the 80s and 90s, right? And now they just explode the whole thing. Where did the government think that was going to lead? You know, I mean, my God.
That's a good question.
Because then we came in and we shut Purdue down. Then the opioid epidemic hit, right? And as much as we shut down some of those things and pharmacies now don't, you know, you can hardly even take a prescription in anymore. It has to be called in.
Mm-hmm.
So we've tried to put the brakes on that, but then here comes fentanyl, because the drug dealer is always going to find a way to get drugs to the United States of America, because we're their biggest target.
Yep.
We're their biggest user. We use 99% of the world's hydrocodone supply. 99%, that's a fact.
Oh, I know.
99%. Jesus. If I'm a drug dealer, you don't think I'd target the United States?
Absolutely.
Of course I would. Yeah. And how does people not see that coming? Yeah. It just makes no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, and it makes me wonder with this kind of movement with Suboxone, and if you think about with Purdue and the Sacklers, and, you know, we watched the documentaries where the guy that worked for the FDA that did the final approval, mm-hmm. then ended up in going and working for Purdue for 2, 3, 4 years, who had a huge salary.
Oh, yeah.
And
that
guy never faced any huge liability either. Like, you know,
right.
What is the thing? What is it who is it in the government that just goes, cool, perfect plan, stamped, send it on its way, and never goes, so it's still an opioid, right? Yeah. And we're going to get people off. No. If they want to just stay on it, like, won't that potentially kill them or cause issues? Yeah. Oh. Yeah, okay. You know, it's like, where is the full knowledge of this thing? Or is it just the machine feeding the money machine?
That's what it has to be. Because, I mean, unless it happens where, like, a sitting president or a high-ranking senator or congressperson has a kid or grandkid that literally, you know, just ODs on fentanyl or whatever, I mean, nothing is clearly going to change.
Well, let's talk
and
about
if that happens, who the hell knows?
Well, our president has a son that's an addict in recovery.
Yeah, no, it's...
There was a senator or congressman, I want to say, from Kentucky, one of those places. And actually, gosh, I wish I could remember his name. He actually had, it was either a child or a grandchild that died of an overdose. And when I went to the National Drug
conference back in 2018, he was presenting, and he made this huge speech about how he was going to get involved, and he was going to do. He hasn't done shit. So you got to ask yourself why.
Yeah.
Why? You know. So and we all say that it's going to take a senator, a congressman, a president, somebody, all right, who child or grandchild died of an overdose. Where's Robert De Niro? I mean, as much as I used to love him, but don't anymore. Okay, you know, and his political views.
Yeah, his grandson, right?
But his grandson died.
Mm-hmm.
They caught the dealer in New York, and they put him in jail. They did.
Isn't it amazing how quick they caught him?
Yeah.
But where's the outrage from somebody that could immediately have a platform on this? Immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, and it goes back to what you were like mentioning the stigma earlier, and it's just like. I mean, I don't know, because thank God it hasn't happened to anybody in my family yet, like actual death.
Right.
But, I mean, I would think that that's probably a really painful thing to go through. And, like, why would you not want to stand up from the top of the mountains and, like, not have somebody else go through what you're currently going through?
Correct. I don't get it.
I don't either, because, you know, when you hear about these high school kids, and I said it the first time I talked with you guys, the buying the Xanax and then they dropped dead because it was laced with fentanyl. Like, what's it gonna take?
Why are schools still not wanting to put Narcan in their schools?
That's a freaking great question.
I mean, now
what's the hell is the answer when they say no? Is it a liability of some type?
They think it's a liability. They're always afraid of a lawsuit. Teachers. In particular, they don't. They're afraid of just that. You know, if they give Narcan to somebody, so we explain to them that it doesn't have any other properties. We explain to them that this is you can shove 8 bottles up your nose yourself, and you're going to get a runny nose. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been Clovis Unified. We got it. Clovis Unified in every classroom, right? So I mean, they're doing a great job. Fresno Unified came in and just took some, but. Not everybody is going to put it in each classroom like we need to. And I'm still trying to figure out the answer to your question, because we explain to them that it will not harm anybody. The little kids, there have been numerous deaths of little kids in the state of California that have touched it at home and came to school and died. You have delivery people that come on campus. You've got police. You got everybody, and nobody's exempt from becoming a substance. Not an addict, but a substance abuser. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got all these different people that are on your campus. Why wouldn't you have it in every damn classroom?
Yeah, I know.
Okay. You know, instead of putting it in strategic locations where the nurse has to go get it and run it out, and by that time the person's dead.
Dead. Yeah.
You know. So again, this is whenever you're talking about drugs of any kind, you're always going to get both loud resistance, and you're going to get the quiet resistance as well. They're not even going to answer. They're not even going to respond. You know, and it's like, Jesus, I just don't get it.
And it's just really simple. It's just like, at least try to change it up, because
this ain't working.
It's decades, it's not working. And no, right. We're not going to save every addict out there. Right. You're not going to get every addict to get sober and stay sober forever.
Right.
But every person's worth trying.
Everyone.
So, yeah. I mean.
Everyone.
It's the exact reflection of addiction, which is the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over again and think you're going to get a different result.
Same thing here.
Well, this is insane bull. I don't, again, I'll say it to the day, I don't know how to fix it. I don't have the solutions. All I know is what I went through and what I've seen and heard other people go through.
Right.
And yeah, for about 10 years, no, I did not feel like I was worth it,
right.
Worth saving and living. And I almost took my own life. And I'm damn glad that I didn't.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and again, I think we leave it with this. There's, until people want to really know about addiction, want to understand it, want to understand the addict, and until our government officials want to understand the whole process, and until they start getting some people in there that know what they're doing, such as people like ourselves that want to help, we're going to keep along the same path.
And that is to me, that's criminal.
Yeah, it's a sad reality.
To me, that's criminal. Yeah.
And hopefully a individual and family members will understand, and you guys can relate to this. I have yet to meet someone in recovery that says it's the worst decision they ever made, and I'd really love to be back and be able to. No.
I know.
Never.
I think,
never
right,
will.
Right.
Yeah, I saw a meme the other day because I follow, you know, a lot of sobriety accounts on social media, and I think it's probably a common saying in 12 steps, and I don't even remember it, but it was something along the lines of, like, you know, once you try recovery or whatever, if you don't like it, your addiction will give you a full refund.
We'll
or
give
something
it right.
like that.
Right.
You don't want your money back,
we will
whatever.
Refund your misery.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it is. Refund your misery. Yep. I'm like, absolutely. And like you said, yeah, there's nobody that has any kind of long-term sobriety that says, man, this sucks.
Yeah. Exactly. Joey, thanks for coming in.
Yeah,
appreciate
thank
you,
guys.
Man. We really do.
We really do.
Proud of you, too, by the way.
Thank you.
And congratulations on your marriage.
Thank you very much. I think that's wonderful.
God, how'd you luck your way into that one, huh?
Man, I don't know. I ask myself that every day. I'll tell you guys what, and I know that when the doors opened and, with her dad to, like, walk in, like, man, it was like, I almost started crying right there because it was just like, it was like an angel.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure like every man, that's what they think when they see their wife, but it was like the light was coming from outside and she had like this huge smile. And
that's beautiful.
Yeah, it was a great day and it's yeah, we're extremely
don't screw
happy.
This up.
I'm going to do everything I can to not screw it up.
Just do the work. That's all it is. All, hey, yeah, you've done the work in so many other aspects of your life that, hey, this is just another good area.
And we do that often. We do a lot of talking when we have little disagreements. And
good.
Oh, that's...
You know, she's in recovery as well. And it's
nice.
So we know how to communicate. Well, she knows how to communicate. She's teaching me how to communicate.
Yeah, they know how to do that pretty well, too.
Well, we thank you for listening on either Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. Hit that subscribe button. Leave a rating and a review. And, of course, if you're on YouTube, hit the subscribe button. Did you notice now every time you say subscribe, the little subscribe button lights up?
Oh.
Subscribe. And make sure you have the bell on for all alerts. So every time we release content here on Parents and Addicts in Need's channel, you get notifications.
If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, please call PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, at 559-579-1551. Or visit us online at painnonprofit.org. Follow us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at PAIN Nonprofit. And please subscribe to the Don't Hide the Scars podcast and share with others wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. And if you would like to donate to PAIN, Parents and Addicts in Need, please click the link in the description to make your tax-deductible donation today and help us save more lives gripped by addiction.